I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver. This is thecommentary.ca. The comedian, writer, and actress Jessica Holmes joins me now. She's just written a new book, I Love Your Laugh, Finding the Light in My Screwball Life. It's described as a hilarious memoir with witty observations on her eclectic upbringing, as well as the sharing of personal experiences about being a wife, daughter-in-law, and mother. Jessica Holmes has been nominated for several Canadian Comedy Awards, as well as a Gemini for her work on television. She starred in her own comedy special, Holmes Alone, and The Holmes Show for CTV and the Comedy Network as well. She was a fixture on CBC's Royal Canadian Air Force. The book is published by McClelland & Stewart, and the website for more is jessicaholmes.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program from here in Vancouver this day, Jessica Holmes. Good morning, Ms. Holmes.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. The assumption is that the comedian comes from a dark place in their life, from their childhood. In your case, is that a correct assumption?
No, I actually wrote a fake beginning to the book.
Yes.
Where I talk about throat punches and being in prison. I had a happy upbringing. I have no complaints about it. I think I was always a bit of an oddball kid, a bit of a weirdo. And my sense of humor comes more from just watching funny people and keeping track of things that happen and then just kind of communicating it back with on stage. Sort of like I do with my impressions, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The book is just one big impression of everybody I know.
Were you always funny?
I don't think that I was always funny. Like, I sure didn't realize that even in high school I was called funniest girl in the school yearbook, and I was still like, oh, that's so weird. Why would they say that? So it absolutely didn't occur to me until, I guess, university when I first tried stand-up. But no, I don't think as a kid. I think I was just an odd little thing.
Yeah. Well, what did you want to be when you were a kid?
I sort of thought it'd be neat to be a secretary and have my own cat someday.
Yeah.
I didn't have a passion necessarily, and it wasn't until, again, when I was an adult and I was out serving a mission, and I started this funny journal where I would just write down funny things that happened, and at that point, I think I was sort of like, yeah, you know what, I'm pretty sure that I'll be communicating funny ideas in some way, shape, or form when I grow up. And part of that was when I got to Venezuela as a missionary, I didn't know the language very well, and so for the first time, I just wasn't able to show my personality. And that's a good way to figure out who you are, because you realize, oh, you know, what I miss is, like, making people laugh. And that's when I kind of really got it.
Did you always write? Doug Pepper, the I guess your publisher,
mm-hmm.
at McClelland & Stewart, says that as a writer, your talent as a writer is revealed in this book.
That was really nice of him to say.
Yeah.
That. I would definitely consider myself a writer even before being an actor, just because I've always jotted down notes and never knew what they were for. I just knew whenever I'd see something that was funny or had an idea, I'd put it in this book I'd call my funny journal. Kind of like a diary, but it's just of embarrassing things that happen to people or things that made me laugh. And then those journals came in really handy when I did start doing stand-up or I did start writing the book, because I have all of these things that have made me laugh for years and years, and so I had this great sort of directory to go to.
Now, you're about the childhood. Your parents, they're pretty religious, are they?
My father is Mormon, and my mother has always been sort of this agnostic feminist. And so it was almost like we were living in a sitcom growing up, because anything that one of them liked, the other one stood against, and vice versa. So we had, you know, from my mom's work, we had anatomically correct dolls that she would bring home and leave around the house. And then my dad would be saying, no one is to have sex till they're married. So we always got mixed messages, and I kind of feel like that just made me open-minded to people's little oddities, because our breadth was so wide growing up. We just felt like the possibilities were endless, because each parent allowed us to do all of the things that were within their interests.
You mentioned being a missionary in Venezuela. How did you end up there? Was it something to do with your dad, or?
I joined the Mormon Church when I was 19, and And if you're a woman and 21, you have the option of serving a mission, and I signed up. Venezuela is where I went, and crazy adventures when I was there, and that was a pretty fun part of writing about. I mean, talk about a fish out of water. Just me trying to fit in with Utah Mormons was an experience and a half, and sort of this little mini June Cleaver took over in my head. And I served a mission for a year and a half in Venezuela, and when I came back, I parted ways with the church around the same time I started doing stand-up. And now I'm Unitarian, but that just sort of means I I don't believe in anything but being good to each other.
And yeah. The Mormon experience, did that influence the stand-up, do you think?
It definitely did. There was a character I did on the Holmes show called Candy Anderson Henderson,
mm-hmm.
and that character absolutely came out of some of these Mormons I would meet, who they were these really sweet, crafty girls, but then every now and then they'd say something like, "Ooh, that poor little thing, she's going to hell. Ooh, I wish her well."
Yeah.
And they always, like, everything they said was with this total sweetness, and they'd be wearing little Holly Hobby dresses, and they kept saying, "Bangs to heaven, Sister Holmes, tease your bangs up to heaven." And so everything was cute about them, but sometimes the things that they would say were just so mean.
Yeah.
Like, who are we to, you know, judge other people?
There's a story on your Wikipedia,
mm-hmm.
about your twin brothers.
Yeah, you know what, I apologize, but I can't discuss that. I don't have my family's
not a problem.
Blessing to discuss that. Sorry.
Not a problem. And that's obviously not in the book, right?
No.
No. How did this book come about?
It came about basically after I left Air Force. I kept thinking, okay, I'm now going to write, you know, the world's best stand-up routine, or I'm going to start writing a sitcom. And every time I'd try and write, all that I could think of was these stories from my childhood. And so I kind of let my inner muse dictate what I would do next, and it was just a book. And it's silly because I'm sure you know writing a book in Canada works out to about a dollar.
Yeah.
So it wasn't sort of financially my first choice, but creatively I couldn't be happier. I mean, I hope I get invited to write another book, because it was such a great time, and I also feel like it's given me this really neat perspective on my childhood. Like, now my whole childhood feels like it was one big comedy, as opposed to, you know, these up and down struggles and stuff. And I kind of feel like everybody could handle looking back on their life through comedy eyes. And just the nostalgia has been incredible. I ended up getting in touch with a lot of people that I had lost touch with, and just seeing my life in this really happy way. It was a totally cool process.
Did you need to write it? Was it sort of a catharsis to write?
I think so. I think subconsciously it must have been, because I was stuck. I had writer's block with every other thing I tried to write, except for this book. When I would start writing the book, it would just, the ideas would flow, and the actual writing of the book didn't take too long at all. I mean, it took me 6 months to get it down on paper, working for maybe an hour every day on it, but the great part was there wasn't a lot of editing to do after the fact, because I feel like what ended up on the paper was the thought that was meant to be there in the first place. So the editing was pretty quick.
Now, you had your own show.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing this about, I guess, 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
CTV, the Comedy Network, you had the special, and then the show, the Holmes show.
Yeah.
What was that like, to have your own show, and to be, you know, in terms of comedy in Canada, it's not a big field.
Mm-hmm.
And to be successful at it, to be at the top of the game, I guess.
I thought it was incredible. It really was. I mean, I haven't felt that kind of creative high until I did this book. So there was like an 8-year
yeah.
gap between when I get good ideas, I guess.
Yeah.
it was wild. Like, I was working with Kurt Smeaton on the Holmes show, and we would perform every sketch twice. We would perform it the first time exactly as it had been written, and then the second time we would just go crazy and we would improvise and just crack each other up. And someone just told me a few weeks ago that was how they had done it on the Carol Burnett show, that they they taped everything twice there as well. And I thought, oh, that's so cool, because she was an idol of mine.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it definitely, I don't expect everything I do to be a home run, but I really feel like the home show was kind of a creative home run. It was the best I could possibly have hoped for, and the audience reaction was really nice. And so I'm just, I kind of thought I would never experience something like that again, and that's why writing the book made me feel terrific. I hope people like it as much as I do. Like, I still have fun reading it myself.
Yeah, and the experience on Air Farce, was that good for you?
That was a beautiful experience. The only reason that I don't include it with the others is because on Air Farce, I wasn't one of the writers.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of the performers, which was really great, because I sort of took that time to creatively recharge and collect new ideas and stuff. But I love Don and Roger. They're the producers and stars of that show, and they really took me under their wing, and they're still like family. We still email each other all the time, and they're coming to my little book launch party.
Mm-hmm.
they're terrific people, and the best part about having other people write comedy for me, write the sketches that I was in, is they had me playing people I never would have figured I would play. Like, they wrote Michael Jackson for me, and that, I would say, is to this day one of the favorite characters I've ever played.
You're still asked to do that, are you?
No. No, very sadly. I mean, I think it's too soon for me to start doing that impression again.
Yeah.
But I do it on stage the odd time in my live act, but there's always more oohs than, than laughs, so I think I'll wait a little longer. But, I mean, it was really cool. They had me playing Haley Wickenhauser. They had me playing all of these different political types, Belinda Stronach, and these are just people that I never would have thought of writing for myself. And so they got me out of my comfort zone and kind of stretched me a bit as an actor. So that was very cool.
But creatively, you said you're not a writer on that show.
Only because I'm not a political writer. I read a paper about 3 times a year, and especially now that I've had kids.
Yeah.
And so I always, you know, I was welcome to submit ideas, and I did write, maybe I wrote like 6 sketches during the 6 seasons that I was there, but my stuff is always more celebrity-based, and because that's not their show's mantra, they can only put so much of that stuff in the show.
So coming off of that, did you find that you had all this creativity that needed to come out, thus this book?
Yeah, and it took me like a year of avoiding writing the book, because I kept saying, no, I'm not, what are you talking about, a book? That's ridiculous. No, what I want to do is a sitcom. And I just kept beating my head against the wall, and finally I gave in to what my instincts were telling me, which of course is a lesson in and of itself, and started writing the book, and since then the book has sparked other things for me. I'm trying to develop a one-woman show around it, sort of like a live stand-up version that could be taped for television, and then I'm also working on a reality series that stems from some of the passion that came about from this book. So I'm excited. I have no clue what's next for me, but I just know it's been an incredible ride so far. So I'm open to anything. That was one of the big lessons I ended up learning from this book. That the theme overall of it was sort of like, how do I, you know, when I was at a place in my life where I'd stopped taking chances, and I wanted to start taking chances again, and to do things that made me frightened or nervous, and when I did that, it helped me kind of get back that youthful naivete and excitement that I had been missing.
You mentioned some of the impersonations you did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always impersonate people at an early age?
I have this memory of in 8th grade, we were asked to put on this little play, and I ended up writing the play, and the play was about all of our teachers. And it was horribly embarrassing. Like, I played our guidance counselor. He's a man. I played him with toilet paper hanging out of his pants. And, you know, I wrote it that the other teachers were hiccuping and farting. And somehow nobody stopped me from doing that, and we ended up performing it for the school. But so I, apparently, yes, apparently I always have done impressions. And going through photos for the book, I also found pictures of myself. Like, I got my brothers to do a rally once when we were supposed to eat liver, and another time my parents asked me to help clean, so I staged a protest dressed up as a maid, and this is when I was like 8 or something. So I think I always had a flair for the dramatics.
You were known for Celine Dion and Liza Minnelli.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing personal appearances and the sort, are you still asked to do those?
Oh, that's the first and foremost thing that people want to see, and I feel like I'm so happy to do it. Now, audiences under 30 don't really know who Liza Minnelli is, some of them, and so I find myself not playing her as much for a younger crowd, but people still want me to do Celine all the time, and I feel like she sort of writes the material for me. I just have to repeat what she says verbatim, and then that's comedy somehow. And so if Celine were here right now, she would say, you know, people cannot get enough of me, so I owe it to the world to share my nasal rantings with them. La la,
ho-hey. Is the key to a good impression the sort of heightening some odd idiosyncrasy in the voice or the personality, say?
Yeah, I think I always look for what does this person not really realize about themselves. Like with Celine, Celine Dion has no idea that she comes across as sort of self-centered as she does, because she's this sweetheart and she's totally naive, but at the same time she does believe herself to be, you know, that an angel farted one day and her voice was born of that, and it's her responsibility to save the world with her voice. And with Liza, I think she just doesn't realize how out there she is. So she's just trying to live the way a normal person lives, but she's got these huge ways of seeing the world and reminds everybody never to swallow pills unless you can afford to someone to drive you home and clean up your barf. She's just adorable. I mean, so I'm now with all these new singers being a bit more homogenized and, you know, everybody's got their hair dyed blonde and stuff, it's harder to find people to do impressions of, I find. I'm really pleased with Lady Gaga. I'm trying to work on an impression of her, and it might take me a while to figure out exactly what angle I'll take with her, but I just think she's incredible. I think she's really unique.
You did the Liza impression. I remember the line about not eating pills that you find on the floor.
Yes. Do you know what's so funny? I got a call from a friend of mine. This is back in, you know, I had only recently left the church at that point when I was doing the home show, and a church member called me and said, you know, I don't think you should be joking about drugs in front of kids. And I was like, that was a sketch. That wasn't a PSA.
Yeah.
That was sketch comedy. But, it was obvious for me that I couldn't really combine those two worlds at the time.
Yeah.
But I have zero complaints about my life. And, I mean, comedy, sometimes it can be an uphill battle. I ended up with stage fright for quite a while and took a few years off of doing stand-up because it was such a kind of terrifying experience. And only maybe a year or two ago was I able to go tackle that lion again. And I'm glad I did. I mean, I think I'm going to have this lifelong love-hate thing going with comedy.
In the book, you discuss your marriage?
Yeah. it's more that I discuss in-laws, but...
Well, what do you say about the in-laws?
Well, you know, it's a lot of girlfriends I had were going through exactly the same thing. We all were, you know, coming out with the exact same statements, and I think there's just a lot of give and take, and we're not necessarily good at the giving part so much in society today, and so it can be a giant thing adjusting to relatives, whether they're in-laws or... even if it's coworkers, I kind of feel like the advice in that chapter can apply to all of them. But in the end, I just learned that, you know what, when I chill out, everything's so much better with my in-laws. And so the chapter isn't necessarily about my in-laws, but it's just about relationships in general and the kind of crazy way that we can exaggerate the things that bother us about somebody. And it was a really dark period in my life or in my marriage when I was trying to adjust to that. And I've made absolute peace with my in-laws, and now my mother-in-law and I just joke about it nonstop, so I kind of felt like that was worth sharing because so many people I know are in the same boat.
And the marriage, how's that working out?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And a friend of mine said to me the other day, you know, a marriage it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And if you look at it as a sprint, then you might, you know, veer off the beaten path or get discouraged really easily. But if you realize that it's this long marathon, you can say, you know what, we have rough patches and we have perfect patches, and that's okay. You know, I have my eye on the prize, and that's, you know, hopefully to grow old and gray together. And I just really enjoy the good times when they're there, and when there's, you know, the rough patches, just know that there's a solution in it, and we can just, you know, hopefully laugh about it every night together.
And you and your husband, Scott, you've got two kids, right?
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old boy and a 3.5-year-old girl.
Oh, did being a mom change everything for you?
Oh, it changed everything. It was insane. I mean, first of all, I shouldn't have been performing after I had a baby. I don't know what was on my mind, but 4 weeks after each of my kids was born, I was back on stage still doing my thing, even though I was going on 3 hours of sleep. And so I definitely feel like I need to apologize to audiences for the somewhat less than stellar performances I did in those windows. But everything is just, it's kind of Camelot-like now. I mean, it was rough at the start. I had postpartum depression with my son. I think that was part of, you know, me going back to work too early and just trying to be everything to everyone. I was trying to be career woman and perfect mom and perfect wife, and the truth is you can barely be perfect at one thing, let alone three things. So I've just let go of those expectations, and you know what, I've accepted that I'm a completely messy, frazzled, happy mom, and I make no apologies anymore for it.
Yeah. Jessica, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today. Good luck with this book. I'm really looking forward to reading it.
Thank you. That was a pretty fun interview.
The website for more is jessicaholmes.com. The book is called I Love Your Laugh, Finding the Light in My Screwball Life. It's published by McClelland & Stewart. Its author, Jessica Holmes, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Lunton.